Life's a Mitch.
Hi everybody, welcome back to another episode of Life's a Mitch. My next guest is a very talented individual. She is a journalist, writer, presenter, media consultant, and master of ceremonies. She has spent over 20 years in Australian television, working as a reporter, producer, and presenter. She is a key player, or she was a key player, at the 24-hour news channel Sky News for over a decade, when she and her hotelier husband moved to Hong Kong in 2010. And then the Xi'an province in northwestern China in 2014. I'm sorry if I've pronounced that incorrectly. She was quickly able to establish herself as a creative go-to girl for anything media-related in the Asia-Pacific region. While communications are a specialty, her work has included hosting premier business awards in Hong Kong, China, and the Philippines. Also, she has presented corporate videos across China and media training for and acting as a consultant for Hong Kong and Australian companies. On top of that, she has been a guest on the RTHK Radio 3's morning show as an expert blogger. Her wide-ranging articles cover from lifestyle to political pieces, and they are regularly published in magazines and online publications around the globe. Her biggest achievement today, though, in her words, besides mastering chopsticks, is navigating life in foreign countries that she has lived in, and also in the current one where she resides in Singapore. She has been back to Sydney and left again various times throughout her career, and she has also released a book called China Blonde, which was released during COVID in 2020. In China Blonde, she also adds her personal stories and the warmth and humour that has been seen on her blog, Mint Mocha Musings, The Hotelier's Wife, An Expat Affair Around the Globe, which have all become critically acclaimed. These days, she is an author's publicist, working with upcoming authors from all around the world. She's an awesome woman, she's hardworking, she's dedicated, and I'd like to introduce you all to the insanely talented Nicole Webb. I hope you enjoy this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the talented and awesome Nicole Webb. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for introducing me like that.
it's going to be an amazing introduction, which you haven't heard yet, and which hasn't been created yet, but that's the way we do it.
Good magic, luck with that.
Magic happens. So, for those of you who are tuned in, thank you for coming back. It's been a while, and I'd kind of, as you know, I like to do some of these off the cuff, and it's been fun. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, and just wanted to see how your Easter was. How did it treat you? Did you get up to much? Or you're in Singapore, so it's not really celebrated over there, is it? Or
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Although my 13-year-old will say the number of Easter eggs in the shops is a bit limited, much to her disappointment. But it's celebrated. We did have Friday off, but they didn't have Monday. Monday's not a public holiday, so yeah, had to work.
Fair enough. And we'll talk about your work. The show's kind of like, as I just explained before, it's like a timeline. We want to get your story. You're a storyteller, and you're actually helping other people share their stories as well. So there's kind of a bit of a cool sort of collaboration. But before we delve into your career, I was just wondering, would you like to join me quickly in having a bitchy with Mitchie? It's just a good ice-breaking tool and to get your bitch out in the world.
How much time have you got, Mitch? Oh,
I have got 78 hours ready to go.
So, I'll just get my list out.
So I like to give the guests the opportunity to go first if they'd like to, or I can. It's up to you, but you sound like you've got one ready to go.
I don't have anything major, because then I'll sound like a really big whinger, but I mean, where do you even start? I mean, there's menopause, and that makes me sound really old. It's the fact that the rubbish truck comes in Singapore every single morning without a doubt.
Yeah.
Which is quite good, but not when you're trying to sleep, right? Imagine that. Noisy rubbish trucks can be, but they're very clean here in Singapore. So every single day. Seriously, what is my biggest bitchy thing? It used to be that people don't indicate when they're driving, but
that comes up quite a bit, actually.
I'm not driving in Singapore, so I can't really bitch about that today. Some friends will know about me, a lot of people don't, is that I really hate phone calls. I'm just can't deal with them. And so I text a lot.
Yep.
And then when someone says, oh, have you got a second? I'll just give you a call. My mind goes into like meltdown. And I'm like, oh my God, no, no. And I literally throw the phone away because I don't want to take a call.
Yeah, it's kind of like that old classic, oh, geez, I need to have a conversation with you. My heart drops every time someone says that to me. And if you...
Yes. I think it's like the introverted extrovert thing for me. And I've been trying to look at this and think, where did it actually start? You know, because it's gotten worse over the years. And I think when I lived in China, nobody could call me because they couldn't speak my language. So it was then when I got back to Sydney, everyone wanted to talk on the phone. I was like, no. So I'm becoming known for that person.
Well, I appreciate you hopping on an audio medium considering you don't like speaking on audio devices. How lucky are we? How lucky am I today?
You are, but the weird thing is I actually find doing a Zoom okay, so I don't get that either. But just
there you go. If you need to get in contact, use Zoom.
Yeah.
that's fair enough. I guess my bitchy would be, I mean, I love a good first world bitch. I really do. Is menu log orders. I mean, time after time, you know, I do 12-hour shifts and sometimes you're just thinking, bugger it, I'm feeling lazy tonight, I'm not bothered making something myself. Yep. So you bring up the app and you're like, tonight I feel like, I don't know, whatever kind of food it is, you order it, and then they get it wrong. And it's like, you know, I've been thinking about like dim sims, whatever, all day, and they rock up, you get the wrong type or they're not even, that's... And that seems to happen continuously. It's like it's written down in front of you. How hard is it? You'd think.
Yeah.
But, and me being a curvy gentleman, I like to eat every single little piece of food that's coming my way. But anyway, so yeah, my bitch is whether it's the restaurants or the delivery drivers not taking care or whatever, just let the fat man eat his food and we'd be all happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not on, is it? That's really annoying. I wonder if it's dependent on where you are. I mean, in Singapore, they have grab, they call it grab orders, and they've been all right so far. So, yeah, we'll see, but they're very efficient here.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that's cool. I always like doing that because it's honestly like an ice-breaking tool for myself and helps me relax a bit. And it's always good to get something off your chest, whether it is, you know, shitty, like, garbage trucks waking you up or whatever it might be like. That's what it's about. It's about leaving the conversation richer than what you walked into it with. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
And you do that, definitely.
Oh, thank you. So, you know, we'll talk about, as mentioned before, like we'll talk about your career in a timeline sense and your book, your publishing works, and your time freelancing. You know, you've lived all over the world thus far. It's been awesome. Just following, like just doing some research on you. But, one question I like to ask everyone to get on is, before take yourself back to the youngest version of yourself you can remember.
Yeah.
And what was the first thing you were ever a fan of? Was it a TV show? Was it a toy you had? Was it a car that you were in? What's the first ever fandom that you ever had?
I think, okay, so now I'm really going to show my age as well as already mentioning menopause. So I don't even know if you would have heard of these, the Wombles. I used to love the Wombles when I was like, I'm talking maybe 3 or 4, and they were a TV show. And they were, they're from Wimbledon, and they had an album out and everything. It was like, it's awesome. Not a cartoon. I don't even know what you call it, but yeah, you could buy all of like the paraphernalia back then. And when I went to Wimbledon in London, like a few years ago, they've got this little sort of dedication to the Wombles. So
yeah, I remember the Wombles. I'm a bit of a TV, like I love going back and watching shows that. And I remember, like, was it Wellington was the clever one? And
yes. Orinoco. And
Tobermory or whatever I remember correctly.
Yes.
I do remember the Wombles. That's awesome.
I thought they were pretty cool. I did. And then probably Wonder Woman on TV as well. That was like a big deal. We'd watch that every Thursday night and get fish and chips.
Oh, yes. That sounds like heaven.
Yeah, it was.
So whereabouts did you grow up? Are you a Sydney born and bred, or where did you grow
No,
up?
I grew up. I was born in Takapuna, Auckland, New Zealand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and spent my whole childhood there. And we moved to Australia to the Gold Coast. All Kiwis do that, right? In the 80s.
I know a few that
Yeah.
have.
So we did that when I was maybe 16. So I finished off high school on the Gold Coast. And then I moved up to regional Queensland, and I went to uni. I was in Bundaberg, Rockhampton, Cairns, you name it. And then I moved to Tamworth for work. I lived in Melbourne for a while and eventually got to Sydney, the big smoke.
Yeah, awesome. I get that sort of ties into my next question. What was
Yeah.
the genesis of your wanting to become a journalist? How did you get involved, and how did you know that was the career path that you wanted to take?
Oh, gee, look, it's not as interesting, or it's not probably as exciting as it might sound, because I guess I used to watch the newsreaders when I was, watching TV as a girl in New Zealand, and always admired them and, thought that would be great to do that job. But I was really shy as a kid, like, don't even look at me. And I would go bright red. So kind of an odd career choice. And then in high school, I remember the career guidance counselor saying, "What do you think you're going to do?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'd like to go to Hollywood, And she's like, "Well, can you act? No. Can you sing? No. Can you dance? Zero. No." So she sort of suggested, "What about being a journalist?" And again, I'm like, "Yes, okay, that's something I kind of always had in the back of my mind." And I'm just one of those people that once I set my mind on something, I don't kind of veer off that track. I'm just like a dog with a bone and I go for it. So it was not an easy career for me to get into. It didn't come naturally, but I just fought hard to become that person.
Yeah, I admire that. I think this day and age, that trait isn't as prevalent as what it used to be. Like
No.
when I finished school, and I was a little bit lost, but after doing some soul searching, I realized the path I was on, and I just did what I wanted to do to make it happen. Like, and it's these days, I mean, I'm starting to show my age a bit here too, but some of the young people I work with want everything like now and don't
Yeah.
realize that it takes more than just a degree to get there. You got to put in the
Yes.
hard yards. You've got to look, I'm not trying to say a whole generation's like that, but some of the individuals I've come across were or are, and it's sort of, you just sort of shake your head going, come on, mate, have a real go here.
I know. I remember a lot of younger kids would come into Sky News and just say, "I want your job, and I should have that after a year of working here, surely." And I'd be like, "Oh, I'd love to say yes, but you know what? It's a lot of hard yards, to do that." I remember when I first finished my degree, I couldn't get a job as a reporter for, at all. And it took me a long time, a lot of work experience for free, like in, regional TV stations. And then I like literally got in my car and drove around the entire country. I think I stopped in Orange and like went to all of the directors and gave them my little showreel and I was like, "Can you give me a job?" And I kind of did that until I got
Yeah, well, that's just answered my next two questions. My questions were, what were some of the obstacles, and what was the
Yeah.
first ever gig that you had? Was that at Sky News?
No, so I got because I couldn't get a job as a reporter. They always said I looked too young, I sounded too young. And to be fair, I did sound very young. And there were, blonde, pretty girls were a dime a dozen that wanted to be on camera. So it wasn't easy. And I ended up getting offered a job in sales at a radio station in Rockhampton. So I went back up there, and did that for a year. Then I got offered a job with the TV station, but still in sales. But I thought, it's TV. Did that and then thought, look, I just need to be a journalist. And that's when I kind of made the showreel and did the big trip around the country because my parents were in Melbourne. So I ended up there and gave myself 1 year to get a job as a journalist, meanwhile working as like a phone operator at ANZ. And if I didn't get the job in a year, I would go back into sales. So anyway, it was literally like November, I think, and I got this job from a news director in Newcastle at NBN, and he said, "You are the perfect example of persistence pays off, and we have a job in Tamworth with NBN TV. Would you like it?" And I was like, "Yep, I'm there." And yeah, the rest is history.
Awesome. Oh, I grew up in Newcastle. That'll always be home for me.
Yeah, great city. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome. I haven't spent a lot of time in Tamworth. I've been there for a few country music festivals and some footy games, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's a cool place. I mean, it's great. And I spent 2.5 years there and just, you know, cutting my teeth, I guess, learning the ropes, doing as you do in country towns, every kind of story from like the big tomato competition to the double murder suicide. So you kind of do it all, you know, and yeah, it was cool.
All right, here's one for you. This will take you back. What was the first ever story you covered? Do you remember?
Oh, you know what? I think for NBN, I remember they sent me out to cover something about the highway being built, something about a new stretch of highway, which, you know, is probably a typical country story when they're I think that was it. And I remember I had to do a piece to camera and you know, they've got to be about 7 seconds long. And, you know, you're trying to, it was pre-recorded, but just trying to get it out and look like you know what you're talking about. You know, it was tricky, but I think that was the first story. I don't know. There were a few like out to Gunnedah, which is near Tamworth, and a lot of really kind of rural stories. But then a lot of council stories, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So
what
not
are you thinking?
exactly. Not exactly, you know, riveting stuff, although the double murder suicide did happen. But yeah, it was, I did that and then I ended up going up to the Gold Coast to do a year up there and running the bureau up there. So the story's got a little bit bigger.
Yeah. That's all. Well, yeah. That's something that would stick with you. Like a murder suicide. Like that's pretty hardcore. All right, so you've travelled around a bit. You've covered stories from different regions. How long was it until you started at Sky News?
It was. So I went up to the Gold Coast and then I was like, you know, I really want to get to Sydney. And I remember going down and just visiting, you know, a few of the TV stations, talking with the news directors and just seeing if I could do some freelance work. And they said, yep, just move down and you can come and do some shifts. So not on camera or anything, just producing bulletins. So basically all kinds of crazy shifts, you know, midnight till 9 or 4 a.m. till whatever. And just, you know, I remember the Olympics were on and I was producing then. So you're just kind of putting together stories, you know, in the bulletins. And then Sky News, I ended up doing quite a lot there. And then after a year of freelancing, I was like, oh, this is all a bit, you know, like you never really know what you're doing. And you've kind of got to say yes to everything because you don't want to say no in case they never ask you back again. So I said to the guy there, is there a chance if a full-time job comes up? Could you think of me for it? And then a job came up with a business show, which I knew nothing about business. And I ended up producing that show, the nightly show, for maybe a year. And I wanted to be a presenter. So there was a health news show that was pre-recorded every week. And I filled in a little bit on that, doing some interviews on camera. And then when she was away, I got to read the actual health news program. So that was kind of my foray into presenting, I guess.
Yeah, awesome. A few other people have had on, other professionals have also said something similar. So they, like some radio guests I've had on, or like people that work in showbiz in Hollywood, they said the same thing. Say yes to everything, you know, spin many plates, do the best you can, and eventually you maximize your chance to be noticed or to be like picked up on something. So yeah, good on you for hooking in and trying to have a crack. And
yeah, look, as I said before, it wasn't that, when I look back, it wasn't a natural progression for me being that introverted person. And I had to work really hard to become that newsreader that I wanted to become, you know, and eventually I became one of the main newsreaders on Sky. And, you know, I ended up being there for 10 years, but it was just a long road and a lot of practicing and a lot of, you know, voice training and a lot of Sounds vain, but you've got to watch yourself on camera and see what you're actually doing and how you look and how you react to things and what your face does, all of that stuff. So I kind of, by the time I left, I think I knew what I was doing eventually.
Yeah, definitely. What do they say? If you do something for 10,000 hours, you become an expert.
Yeah. You have to. And Sky News was always, it's a bit different these days, but it was all just lots of like news bulletins around the clock. So you had breaking news and you were, thrown things just at the last minute and interviews that you had to do and you had no, research or anything. So it's just flying by the seat of your pants for most of it.
Did you have a classic sign-off line?
No, because we were all just like, there were so many of us presenting at Sky then. So you didn't really get to give it too much of a personal touch. You just had to, churn out the bulletins one after the other
Yeah, fair
and
enough.
deal with technical issues and auto cues dropping out and, lots of crazy things that go on behind the scenes.
Well, how does this one sound? Here from all of us at Sky News, the sky's the limit. I'm Nicole Webb. Good night.
Cheesy, but good work. Yeah. I remember signing off, like, I think the last bulletin, I don't know, they all came on and said something. And, occasionally we'd divert ourselves into something, like, I think when I got engaged and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, fun days, really good
Oh,
fun.
I'd have so much fun with that. And if you need any news, you can find it in the cloud in the Sky News. This is Nicole. You could definitely.
You're going to keep going with this, aren't you?
Oh, look, I know time is precious. You said how much, you asked me how much time have I got? How much time have you
Wow, let me see.
got? So what, okay. So you do your 10 years at Sky, and then what happens next? Was it then you transitioned overseas with your husband? Is that right? Or what was next for you career-wise?
So I met my husband on a blind date and he was in
Oh, interesting.
hotels. Yeah.
Yep.
I think that was kind of well, it was just before like Tinder and all that came out. So it was like literally a blind date set up with kind of friends. And yeah, he worked in hotels and he told me at the beginning that they like to sort of move you around. And I was very adamant that I didn't want to do that. And I kind of thought I'd miss the boat, of living overseas. But then fast forward, I guess a year later, maybe, and he got offered a job in Hong Kong at the W Hotel. And I think I just thought, I've been at Sky for 10 years. I had kind of lost a bit of my ambition. I was just kind of cruising along. I was doing the shift that worked on air till midnight, and we wanted to have family and stuff like that. So I found myself saying, let's do it. Let's move to Hong Kong. And yeah, off we went. And I also found out we were pregnant at the same time. So it was a bit of like a shock to the system, really.
Gosh, could you make any more changes at the time? My goodness.
I know. Suddenly I'm in Hong Kong with like, no house, living in the hotel for 6 weeks, pregnant, no job, no car, no friends. It was a massive change.
How did you get through that process? Because, like, I've lived overseas and change, especially when you haven't got a big support network, is hard enough, but to be pregnant must have been like that on steroids, like that's. So how was that transition? Like, how did you sort of make it through the initial phase?
I think looking back, maybe the hardest thing at that time was just kind of reestablishing who I was without being a newsreader, because that, I guess, had become my identity and I'd worked so hard for it. And without it, I was suddenly like, what am I? Who am I? And then suddenly throw a baby in the mix and it's just a whole new ball game. So I don't know, how did I get through it? I guess it just, I mean, time is a great healer, isn't it? And it's just, putting yourself out there out of your comfort zone, isn't it? And meeting people that you otherwise wouldn't meet. And then opening yourself up to other sorts of work. Like I think I said to you, I used to do some MC gigs and I used to do a bit of media training because I didn't really want to go back into full-time work at that point. So I was just doing what I could. I started writing articles for, different websites, and then I started up a travel entertainment blog. And eventually, as living overseas, you kind of eventually it becomes home, but it does take, I always say it's like a pregnancy. It takes at least 9 months to get used to it.
Yeah, well, and I know Hong Kong, there are a lot of people there that speak English, but also that's how did the extra dimension of having it as a non-English first speaking country, I guess, would have made it harder as well. So you
Yeah,
got.
I was living. Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say that extra dimension of that transition would have made it a little bit harder too. But okay, so you spent some time in Hong Kong. You had your daughter, Ava is her name? Ava? Your
Yes.
daughter? Yep. So you had Ava and you're doing your family thing. And how long were you over there for? And sort of, you said you were doing articles and stuff. Like, what happened next after Hong Kong? And how long were you there?
So we were there for 4 years. And yeah, I was just talking to someone the other day, a friend from Hong Kong, about Hong Kong, because they came to Singapore and they're like, gosh, does everyone speak English here? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. And you realize back then, why Hong Kong seems so foreign. Looking back, it's so civilized and Western. But yeah, still, there are a lot of people that don't speak English. So anyway, 4 years in, loved it, could have lived there forever, but James needed to get his kind of role as general manager because he was number two at the W. And we were just looking at all these other countries and, different places were coming up, Bangkok, Seoul, all of these places. But China just kept popping its head up because they were just building so many hotels there. I think in 1 year, the company that James worked for, Starwood at the time, had built 80 hotels in China. So there was really no escaping going to China. So eventually, I think after, all sorts of places coming up and not happening, I'm like, we've just got to go to China and get it done, and Wuhan came up ironically, which was obviously before anyone had ever heard of it. And we went up there for a weekend and just decided we couldn't do it. And then Xi'an came up, and all I had to go on was Google, to see what it looked like. And it looked quintessentially Chinese, lots of red lanterns and nice buildings. So I said, let's just do it. And we moved to the middle of China, which then you talk about no English, and there was really no English. And it was really hard. That was culture shock at its best, just people living there had never seen a Westerner in real life. So Ava and I'd walk outside and just get swamped with people.
So how was it like living in that part of the world? How long were you there for?
2.5 years. So I think I literally had my heart in my mouth for the first 3 months, just thinking, what have we done and how am I going to survive this? Because I didn't know a single soul. You'd walk out, we lived in the hotel, you'd walk outside and there was not a Westerner in sight. It was just so different, people spitting on the streets and people, babies with nappies with a big split in the back, just going to the toilet anywhere. And, it was just really confronting, I think, looking back, and scary in a way because you just don't know the culture and you don't know, you can't speak to anyone. So, it took time. And of course, as I said before, with time, you get to know a place. And eventually while it was really tough, we ended up loving our experience there.
Yeah, nice. And after that, did you come back to Sydney, or where were you after? Yep.
So we spent 2.5 years there, and then we kind of weren't ready to come back, but pollution was very bad there as well. So, it's like we've really got to get it. We can't stay here for too much longer. And a job came up in Sydney, and, we knew it would be difficult just to get back to Sydney. So we thought we should really take this opportunity. And I'd started writing my book, and I thought there'll be more opportunities back in Sydney to do things with that. So 2017, we moved back to Sydney. And yeah, we ended up being there for 6 years, which is great. And I thought we might be there. I thought we'd stay there. I thought maybe our days of moving had finished, but clearly not.
Well, that you did an absolutely awesome transition. My next question was, so living in China was, I'd imagine, a huge motivator for your book, China Blonde. So I was just going to ask, can you talk to us about like what China Blonde's about and give us like in your own words, what it's about and share some cool stories that come with the writing process as well.
Yeah, well, it's literally about our time there, that 2.5 year period, I guess. And it's all about, you know, those first days moving there and I guess going through the process of coming out the other side and learning about the culture. You know, I did about 50 different interviews with lots of locals using a translator mostly. I did learn to speak Mandarin, but very basic. So we did, lots of interviews with, you know, the local hairdresser to an old 90-year-old who had been in the war to, you know, all sorts of different locals to really just, I guess, understand their culture and, you know, that whole communist country and how they feel about their lives. And, you know, I mean, many of them have never even left the province that they live in. You know, they didn't even know where Hong Kong was. So it was very interesting. And yeah, so I kind of put that all into the book and made it kind of humorous as well with all the funny things that kind of came up at the time. And a lot about friendships, because those are what really sustain you, I guess, when you're in a foreign place. And then saying goodbye to it all. So that was, I just kind of started writing it in China. And then when we got back to Sydney, I was able to go to a lot of different writing groups and really learn how to write a book, how to write a memoir, because it's a lot different to writing a news story. And eventually it was published in 2020 during COVID.
Well, good, you know, in hindsight, I mean, kind of maybe it was a good thing it was released because people needed something to do whilst they were home. I don't know. You could look at it from both angles, I suppose. So congratulations on the release of the book. So it's around 2020. It's going to be ridiculously hard to put something out, but when you create things, I find it's this sense of like accomplishment. How did you feel going like at the time of release? Were you nervous? Were you excited? What was going through your mind at the time?
I think it's always a bit surreal, isn't it? Like you've spent so long on this project and you've put every ounce of effort into it. And I must have read it like 1,000 times, you know, looking for typos. And it just the fact that it's done, I think, is a miracle in itself, you know, because everyone wants to write a book, don't they? But it's actually the hardest part is finishing it. So I think I was just really happy that I'd done it and I could put it out into the world, and also that I had kind of like a recollection of our life in China, because I'm sure we'll forget about it. And I'm sure our daughter Ava, you know, won't remember much of it at all. So when she's older, it's probably good for her to read it. So it was good. I mean, like you say, COVID was hard because I couldn't do a lot of talks and all of those things, have a big book launch that I'd always envisaged. So I had a lot of mini launches with friends and other people, but it was a fun time.
Yeah. Awesome. And what's some of the feedback that you've received from it over the years?
Yeah, good. I mean, look, I did all my own publicity because I was, you know, I knew the landscape with the media. I knew a lot of journalists still in the industry. So, you know, I got some good coverage. You know, I had an article in Sunday Life. I had something in the Fin Review, you know, did lots of podcasts, ABC Radio. So it was fun. I enjoyed doing that, which is kind of what propelled me to the next phase, I guess, of my career.
You are making this very easy. So yeah, for those of you who are still listening, you've gone on to be a publicist and helping and working with upcoming authors or authors releasing new works. How have you found the transition from releasing your own work to passing on the knowledge and wisdom to up and coming authors so far?
It's been really interesting because I remember someone, a good friend, said to me when I was doing my own book, you should do this for other authors. And I thought at the time, I don't think I would feel as excited to be doing that for some other book, you know. But then lo and behold, I got some authors coming to me, and one of them was the Peter Singer's company or nonprofit, The Life You Can Save. And, you know, Peter Singer's philosopher, philanthropist, you know, known worldwide. And so that was one of my first clients. So that was great. I learned a lot from that. And then it's really just snowballed. And I've done probably 30 campaigns for authors so far, and many, many different genres, fiction, nonfiction, health, all sorts. And I actually love it because I think I like a good project. So I do really like to, see what media we can get and, tailor a strategy for them specifically. And I get to read books for a living, so that's fun.
That's always good. I'm more of an audiobook guy because I'm like constantly in the car going, or if I'm at work or operating all the big equipment, you chuck an audiobook in or heaps of podcasts, you're just cruising along, fixing roads in a grader or something. It's like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Is there a type of genre that you haven't had a chance to work with yet that you want to delve into? Maybe like a sci-fi or something? Or have you already worked in
I
that
find,
space?
no, I haven't worked in sci-fi. I've worked in fantasy. I find fiction is a lot harder to do, unless because the person has to have a good story. I mean, I think as a journalist, I'm always trying to find the angle or the hook, about that author. It's not just about their book, but what is it about them? Because you can get more media that way. So I find like nonfiction books are easier, a lot easier. But yeah, look, I don't know. I think I've just about covered all bases so far, but you never know. I'm
No.
reading a book a week at the moment, so
There
I'm
you go.
churning through them. Yeah.
That's cool. So what do you
Yeah.
think, if for anyone who might be out there thinking of creating something, what do you think it takes to be a successful author, do you reckon?
I think it takes perseverance. I think for a start, like I said, you really need to finish the book because I know so many people want to be authors or have a book. We've all got a book in us, right? But you start writing and it's a really hard process and it's quite a brutal industry. I mean, the financial rewards are not huge unless you're that top, 1%. So I think you've got to be prepared to have something on the side as well. It can't be your only, source of income or anything like that. It can become that, but in the beginning, I think you need to go in with that mindset, that it's like a side project. And yeah, just be really consistent and know that you've just got to keep pushing the message out there. You can't just, do one thing and then expect all these sales to come in overnight. It takes time.
Yeah, that's sort of mirrors what Bradley Trevor Greve. So if listener, if you cast back probably five episodes, I've had one of Australia's most like successful authors, and he started writing when he was broke, sort of renting in some piece of crap apartment in Sydney. And he said there was at a time where he thought, oh, I can't do this. This is ridiculous. What am I doing here? And it's some you hear the story of other creatives like some actors coming up, they share stories of how they are broke, like Jim Carrey's story, how he started is incredible as well. But I like that you said that, you got to be consistent, you got to back yourself, but you also need to fund it too. So I like how you sort of echo what, echo that as well. So there's consistency. So for the consumer out there thinking about creating something, always create, just find a way to do it. And listen to me. I'm some sort of expert, fair income.
It's true though. You've just got to really be persistent with anything. It's not going to just happen for you unless you're just super lucky. Nothing's really ever just happened for me. You have to really work at it. And I think a lot of authors get disappointed, or creators, don't they? Because it doesn't happen straight away. But it's just, you just got to keep on keeping on.
Yeah, and I think I'm gonna sound like an oldie again. Like, we're at an age where everything's accessible by fingertip and everyone wants everything now. Like, I want my DoorDash now, damn it. But you're exactly right. So yeah, hang in there, persevere, and I eventually, like, I would like to be able to do this and monetize this full time. It'd be amazing, but I know it's probably not feasible. One, I need to learn how to market it properly. And two, like, I just, yeah, like, I don't know, I just it's fun. Like, you do it to stay social, and to stay sane. So anyways, I'm getting off topic.
It. I mean, the more you do it, the more people come to know who you are, the more, the bigger your audience is, and the more chance you have got of, having it sponsored or whatever. So,
Yeah, 100%.
yeah, it's
Going this
totally
going
possible.
into the third year now. It's 104 episodes, I think it is, 105 maybe.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you. So when you're not in the realm of reading books or helping others, how do you like to spend your spare time? Do you have any things you enjoy doing by yourself or with your family?
Nothing. Oops. Yeah, I do like a quick nap.
Yeah, same.
Shopping. I like a good shop.
Yep.
Eating. Just chilling out, we're in Singapore now, so obviously there's a lot to kind of see and do. So we try and get out there, and see something new every week, or travel somewhere every few months, which is it's just so easy, from places like this. So yeah, we're going to a little island off Singapore next weekend, which will be interesting. So yeah, just the basic things, traveling, eating, drinking, napping, all those things.
That is the name of my autobiography coming out.
Yeah.
The
Perfect.
Mitch Kelly story. No.
Yeah.
yeah, that totally all relatable. Like, and yeah, when you spend umpteenth amount of time, collaborating with others and freelancing and you see it sounds like you wear many professional hats and that reflection time, that chill out time, it's important so you don't burn out.
Yeah, it's just finding that sounds cheesy, but it is finding that balance, isn't it? And I'm not sure I found it yet with this new role, but I'll get there.
How long have you officially been in said role?
Well, I've been doing it for a couple of years, but I didn't really put the word out there until last year. I was kind of just getting clients from other publishers that I knew. And then I thought I better actually, it went a bit quiet. And I thought I better just maybe let people know. And oh my God, then it just absolutely snowballed. So it's been at this pace probably for about 3 or 4 months. So it's kind of very new where I've got about 10 clients on the go. So I am just working out that juggle, I guess.
And it'll come, I reckon. Like you sound like you're absolutely all over it, and you know what you're doing, so it'll happen. What is next for you? What is later in this year have in store for you and the family?
Look, just a bit of travel. We're going back and forth to Australia a couple of times. James is from the UK, back to the UK. Maybe trying to see some other places. Got a lot of visitors coming to Singapore, which is always nice. And just working and getting, I guess, getting used to this new business and doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And if people did want to get in touch with you or find your book, or how can they go about doing that? Where?
Probably like just my website, Nicole Webb Online, or I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all those places.
And I'll put a link to those in the bio. We'll close out shortly, but to those who might be listening who'd be a fan of your work, what is something that you'd like to say for them? Here's a chance to have that classic sign-off line if you'd like to.
Oh, thank you. Just I don't know who is a fan of it, but if you are, or my work, or you've read my book, I'm so appreciative, because like I said, it is, hard to get the word out sometimes, but it's a big world, and I've had people buy it from all sorts of places that I probably don't even know about. So I'm very appreciative, and yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, as everyone knows that listens to this, like I love storytellers. I love the storytelling in, the art form in general, whether it's fact fiction, whether it's, a doco series, well, it doesn't matter. Like many mediums is I love
Yeah.
doing, I genuinely love people's stories. And when it sort of come across you on the socials, it's like, oh, who's this person? And I looked in, I was like, oh, cool. Sounds like a very talented individual, and you were kind enough to pop on and share some cool stories. And yeah, I appreciate your time. That's always
Thank
nice.
you.
That's
Yeah.
genuinely like a pleasure, because it's when someone gives me their time, it's the one currency you can give but never receive, if that makes sense. Like,
Yeah.
so
Yeah.
like anyone who wants to help this bald-headed idiot having a crack, I'm genuinely appreciative of. So thanks for your
Well,
time.
now I know about your podcast. You're not going to get rid of me. I'm going to be sending all my authors your way.
More, hey, how good? The more storytellers, the better.
Yep,
That sounds great.
Definitely. And you tell a good story, so awesome.
I can share a story with you when I was coming out to Orange, whether you like it or not, I'm not sure. It's a little bit cheesy. It's got a few giggles if you quickly want to hear that one.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so when I was moving from Newcastle, I'm in two minds going, am I made the right call? So I moved out here for a new mining position. I got over doing shift work and stuff anyways. So I had the truck with all my stuff in the back of it, and I called in to one of the service stations in Kelso, which is 45 minutes from here and is an absolute shithole. Anyways, so I've used pump number two, then I've walked in to pay for said fuel. And there was this cranky little old lady in front of me speaking to the attendant, had a real raspy voice. She said, excuse me, to him. He's like, oh, yeah. Can you tell me where the toilet is? So he's pointed towards the entrance. So she's waddled past me. And this guy instinctively says the number of the bowser out loud to whoever approaches him. He looks at me innocently and just says number two. And she's still in earshot. She says, as a matter of fact, you pervert, I'm doing a number one. What the F is it to you? and oh, my goodness. I couldn't stop laughing. God.
And you're welcome to the country.
I'm thinking, oh, have I made the right move here?
It's fun. Oh, see, you get all those fun stories when you move. You know what's going to happen.
when I was living in England too, it was crazy stories. Maybe we'll get you back on and we'll share some stories another time. But yeah, I went over there in 2016, 2015-16. And I just had a breakup. And I was thinking, I had a bit of money in the bank, and I was in a job where I wasn't enjoying myself too much, working for a council, actually. Now, got a little call back to the start of the episode. And I'm getting better at this. It's pretty good. And I don't know. I just, you know, when you just think, oh, I need a break. So I had a breakup, and I just thought, bugger it. A friend of mine said, why don't you try go live overseas or something? I had some friends that had done Canada. They loved it. I had two friends that were in the UK, and I was like, you know what? Let's do that. So I applied for a visa, hopped on a plane. You get it 6 weeks later. The flight was booked about 3 weeks after that. And yeah, I went over there and poured beers and traveled a bit. And
was it in London or?
I got out of London pretty quick as to how expensive it is. So I went up to Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the walkabout bars, how they're Australian themed.
Yeah.
So for the listeners out there, there's a chain of bars in the UK, the Australian theme, and they sell Fosters. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Anyways, I went in there. I said, are you guys hiring at the moment? And she looked at me. She said, say that again. She goes, oh, you're actually Australian, are you? I said, yeah. She said, if you can pour a pint, you can start tomorrow. So pour the pint.
Oh, awesome.
If you're unfamiliar, you have the brand of the beer, you pour it in, and you face the brand to the customer, and you wipe off the little head with the little white paddle thing. And she said, if you can skull that, you can start today. And within seconds, I've jammed it down. And she's like, yeah, okay, I'll show you around. And, yeah, it was great. Like, I made friends and eventually found housemates. And, yeah, it was a good
great
time.
Yeah, great story.
Just got balder and fatter. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's what happens.
But, yeah, yeah, it sounds. I look forward to collaborating with you and some of your authors going forward, and we'll get you back on for another chat. We'll share some more stories, and thank you for today. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Not a problem. I'll get this out on the socials very quickly, and for everyone who's listening, thank you. I'll see you on the next story. Bye for now.